Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I've got Rockets Purple Glare behind me out on the set. All of our conversations brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. I got the old school chicken palooza here. I did work a little chicken and Western fries over the weekend. You could certainly work some coffee. I don't think Justin Tucker was worried about anybody getting drafted ahead of him over the weekend, so he was eating his chicken very, very peacefully. But there were certainly places up for grabs here, Luke, as we break down the entire draft and the totality of what they addressed and what they did not address. They managed to piss off everybody in Cleveland by drafting a kid whose last name is Cleveland, which I thought was great. We can get a Buffalo and two Pittsburghs in here, too. We'll see how that goes, but...
Oh, no question. I mean, how can you not love the irony of the Baltimore Ravens drafting a player named Cleveland? I mean, it's just perfect, right? And, oh, by the way, Ben Cleveland's 6'6" and 357 pounds. So let's remember that. Another guy nicknamed Big Country.
Although he's never even been to Cleveland. Take that.
But you look at someone like him, and, I mean, we've heard John Harbaugh talk about it. We've heard Eric DaCosta talk about it. We've heard about, you know, offensive coaching staff. They want big guys on their offensive line. And the idea of a guard being 6'6", 357 pounds, and I'm sure he'll probably trim down a little bit just by default when you're in training camp and sweating and not two-a-days anymore, but still going through the rigors of life in the NFL. But, I mean, you're talking about a kid who, it's funny saying calling him a kid when he's 357 pounds, but just an absolute monster. It's funny. You know me, Nestor. I'm a WWE fan, and Braun Strowman is a WWE superstar right now. His nickname is the Monster Among Men. And I had a Twitter follower tweet to me that, is it Ben Cleveland or is it just Braun Strowman? And you'll get no argument from me because this guy is just monstrous. But I think what you like when you watch him on tape, I mean, he's very physical, very strong, obviously. But I think when you also watch him, and I think it's worth noting that while he did play a lot the previous 2 years, it wasn't until this past year that he was a full-time starter for Georgia. He does still have some work to do, but when you just watch how physical, how brutally strong he is, that certainly gives Joe D'Alessandro something to work with at the left guard position. If we're working under the assumption at this point, and it's looking more and more that way, that Bradley Bozeman's going to move to center. They've talked about it the last couple of years. We've asked John Harbaugh about it in the spring, and you know he'd always say maybe, but it feels like there's some traction there now, mainly because you bring in a Ben Cleveland, and let's keep in mind, we mentioned the Cleveland thing. Nestor, this is also the third straight year the Ravens have drafted a guard named Ben. Ben Powers, Ben Bredesen, Ben Cleveland. The previous two in the fourth round, now a third round pick, but... You know, they've got some competition there. And
Ben Grubbs is a winner, right? That's
good. I mean, if you want to go way back, sure. So, but I think when you kind of look at this and how this shakes out, we know that they weren't happy with the center position last year. They went from Matt Skura to Patrick McCary. They gave Tristan Colon Castillo a look. And, you know, McCary and Colon Castillo are still in the mix. I don't think those guys are, you know, on the outs or in the doghouse or anything like that. But I think if you can add a veteran at center in Bradley Bozeman, who keep in mind was a center at Alabama, so it's not like it's something that's foreign to him. But you do that, and then you've drafted guards, fourth round of 2019 with Powers, fourth round last year with Ben Bredesen, and third round now with Ben Cleveland. You need to be able to produce a rock solid starter when you've committed that kind of capital at the guard position, third, fourth round picks. Not everyone's going to hit, but when you're talking about three in a row in that middle range of the draft, you want one of those guys to step up. From a physicality standpoint, from a brute strength standpoint, yeah, you'd say Ben Cleveland has a great chance. At the same time, Ben Powers and Ben Bredesen have been in the system a little bit longer. And we also know in this day and age, with OTAs and practice hours and guys like John Harbaugh every year talking about wanting guys in the building more and more, wanting more and more practice time. And now how that's clashed with, you know, what's you know, now we're on the back end, but the pandemic's still there, and that's still a consideration for the spring and the summer and how you proceed. And clearly the union and teams have had differences of opinion, whether they're truly related to the pandemic or a 17-game schedule, whatever. But I think it is worth noting, Ben Cleveland's a rookie. So I think it's interesting to look at their two first-round picks, Rashad Bateman and Adafe Away, who are both going to play plenty, but I think you can make an argument that they won't necessarily start. I think probably Bateman, Sammy Watkins will get a little bit of a nod, even if it's just ceremonially speaking. And in Oway's case, you still have Pernell McPhee at rush linebacker. And I think McPhee, if I had to bet now, probably begins the season as a starter. They're going to rotate guys. We know that. So, but I think if you're talking about anyone in this draft class where you say, this guy, who has the best chance to quote unquote start and play the most, you know, when you're talking about potentially a starting offensive lineman, I think Ben Cleveland could be that guy. Again, he's got to get in the building, got to see what he looks like. He is someone who does need to refine his technique, his footwork, and, you know, could be a little bit sloppy, you know, for those that kind of break this down on a more technical standpoint. So he's got some growing to do. From a developmental standpoint, but boy, you look at him just manhandling guys in the SEC. You know, we're not talking about, you know, the Mountain West or, you know, some mid-major. This is SEC football. It's big boy football. And seeing him just push people around on opposing defensive lines, there's a lot to like in Ben Cleveland beyond just the irony of his name.
Luke Jones joining us here. All of our WNST conversations are now wise conversations. We call them intelligent conversations, but we're going to soup it up here a little later on in the week. We're going to get some cicada talk in here. I'm going all over the place. I'm doing a whole bunch of Derby stuff on the back end. Greg Scherer is going to be joining us this week to talk Derby as we get ready for Preakness. I might have a really big surprise for Don Moeller before the week's over, all brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. So get out there and support them. Round up for MDA as well during this Mother's Day week. Luke, the rest of this thing, and I'm going to have on Gary Davenport this week. I'm chasing down some, you know, Kyle Krabs, some people that really look at this. I'm going to find Jeff Legwall before it's all over with and talk some draft. But report cards coming in, right? A minus, B plus, whatever. I think it's very hard to look at the Ravens and see what they've done, where they augmented themselves, that we're going to sit here and talk about this kid from Ohio State, and we're going to talk about, you know, the late picks and this kid that looks like a bowling ball from Michigan, you know, Ben Mason. They're good at this, right? I don't know that the Ravens ever get a D or a D minus, or that they ever trade enough picks away that they only, like the Redskins, they wake up on Monday and they got three picks or something, and they're unleashing the $10,000 signing bonuses on players, whatever. The Ravens will get five more guys that were on people's boards as fourth or fifth or sixth round picks that they'll clean out of this thing from a free agent perspective, but they really did a nice job. I mean, people are going to ask me how they draft. I've followed these things very, very closely 20, 25 years ago. Not as closely now. I mean, we're not out in Indianapolis for a week in February drinking and doing the underwear Olympics and running around to hear what this quarterback we're never going to draft has to say or whatever. But I do see the way the whole world sees it and watching it all weekend long and seeing where their needs are. And you and I talk about them at length to see the kinds of players they brought in. This is what they do. This is what Steve Bisciotti feels like they excel at more than anything, which is picking people.
Yeah, sure. You're not going to get any argument from me there. I mean, grades right after the draft are stupid. They just are. And I hear people make arguments, and look, even the whole concept of, well, if we're grading how they did from a value standpoint, according to whom, right? I mean, it comes down to
they're the ones that evaluate what they need.
No, but my point is with the grades, you're going to give them grades if they took players that you liked. You're going to give them not so good grades if they took players that you didn't like. So from that standpoint, it's such a, I get it. I mean, you and I are talking right now.
Well, the wide receiver, they passed on the other kid, right? They passed on the kid everybody else was higher on, right? I mean, there's a little bit of that. And then there's like Charles Davis, who I'm trying to track down this week. Charles Davis nailed the draft. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Charles Davis picked – he mocked them 27 and 31 perfectly. Like,
right.
Who amongst us mortals could have done that?
Yeah, I mean, I there were a few others that I saw who had that combination. And again – wide receiver, edge rusher. I mean, go figure. I mean, regardless of how the Ravens felt, everyone else felt they needed wide receivers. So clearly, you know, as much as we can talk about them being coy and, you know, what DaCosta said at the Liars' Luncheon, clearly they were targeting a wide receiver because they took one there. You know, Rashad Bateman, I think, you know, they felt very good about that pick. They feel great about that pick. They did their homework there. I mentioned Keith Williams and T. Martin coming in, guys that have been at the collegiate level recently, and I think have a good feel for evaluating talent. But
by the way, I got my new Liars' Luncheon question, since I'm the guy that named the Liars' Luncheon.
Why are we doing this?
No. I'm going to go next year. I'm going to eat the food because I'm not going to have a mask, got my shot. No matter what, I'm going to go next year. And I'm going to say, Eric, is there anything I could say this year to insult you about position category X?
Right. But going back to kind of looking at this thing, you also do have to remember, we don't know what's going to happen. There was a point in time, and the 2015 draft is perfect. You know, Rashad Perriman, Max Williams, Carl Davis, and was it, that was a Za'Darius Smith here. Those four.
Urban or no? Am I losing? No, Brent Urban. I'm nuts.
Okay. Brent Urban was the year before. But my point was, remember, that was the offseason in which Torrey Smith left, Owen Daniels left, Haloti Ngata was let go, and I'm trying, who did they? Anyway, the point was, it was almost like a checklist. They went down and they addressed
that. You and I did radio that morning, right?
And
exactly.
We talked about it, and everyone loved that draft. And then when you look at that draft a couple years later, it wasn't so good. My point is, there is, when you do look at these grades right now, the Ravens get the benefit of the doubt from a grading standpoint because they do have a track record of being really good at
like they did when they took that kid Matt Elam out of Florida.
Exactly. And to be clear, I'm not saying this is a bad draft class, but that's where, they're going to be near the top in the grades. Now, you look at some other drafts in the AFC. Let's focus on them specifically. I do think Cleveland had a good draft. I think you're seeing them get high marks. They've really rebuilt that defense. I think everyone's trying to talk about Pittsburgh. And look, I'll never count the Steelers out entirely because they're the Steelers. And you have to have that begrudging respect for them, no matter how much we hate them here in Baltimore. But I look at Ravens and Browns as, in 2021, I think the AFC North are those two teams going at it. I think Cleveland's roster is really, really good, just like
you
the Ravens roster
Pittsburgh's
is really, really good.
You don't believe in Pittsburgh's quarterback anymore, do you?
I don't love the idea that they took a running back in the first round when I don't think James Conner was the problem last year. I think it was their offensive line, and they waited to address the offensive line. I mean, Roethlisberger...
Well, we're going to have their right tackle, right, before it's all over.
Their old left tackle looks like Villanueva. Whether it's him, whether it's Dennis Kelly, whether it's someone we're not talking about, clearly they're going to sign some veteran. It's not just going to be Tyree Phillips getting the job by default. They're going to bring in a veteran. But anyway, Cleveland had a good draft. I thought Miami had a good draft. Miami, it comes down to that roster is loaded. Do you believe in Tua or not? I mean, it's a very simple question. If you think he takes a jump in year two, I think Miami could be a Super Bowl, serious Super Bowl contender when you look at how much young talent they've accumulated on that roster at this point, collected on that roster.
We also look at New England being out of the way and the Jets not being very good and Buffalo...
Sure.
What Buffalo is.
Well, I mean, I think Buffalo's, there's no reason to think Buffalo won't have another great year, but I think Miami's ascending. That's the point. They're, like Buffalo, they're a team that's young and really talented and getting better. It comes down to Tua. And the Chargers are another team that's been, talked about as far as what they've done. We saw what Herbert did last year. I think you're seeing the AFC, as much as it's kind of been, it was Ravens Chiefs in 2019. Last year, Ravens Bill, it was Chiefs Bills Ravens. The Browns a little bit, if you were buying that. But you have some other teams in the AFC.
I think the Titans
better.
Are legitimate too.
Yeah. But they've also, they've undergone some change with their roster. So I think it'll be interesting to see, how that looks. Derrick Henry having a 2,000-yard season. We saw this with Jamal Lewis. You run for 2,000 yards. What's that look like the next year? What's that look like the year after that?
You know, in a 17-game schedule.
Sure, no question. So I think it's interesting in that way. But bringing it back to your point about grades and how a draft looks, the Ravens would have to have such an inexplicably weird, off-the-beaten-path draft for teams to give them, or for the pundits to give them a bad draft grade. Now, 2 years from now, if Rashad Bateman is one of those first-round wide receivers that doesn't work out, because that happens lots of places, and if Odafe Owe never develops and becomes the productive player that matches his physical measurables, then yeah, this draft won't look so good. So, but that kind of brings my point. I think they had a nice combination of productive players with some upside, where you're talking about Owe. I mean, my goodness. I mean, he had zero sacks last year. We can't hide from that. But you look at what he does physically. You know, his physical, his 40 time was slightly better than Rashad Bateman's. I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, for a 257-pound, 6'5" guy. But he's got to develop. He's got to develop some pass rushing moves. He's very green in that way, where you're not going to be able to out-physical guys at the next level. You know, you're going to be going up against all-pro left tackles.
Well, we talk so much about how the Ravens have this philosophy, as all the NFL teams do, which is, you give me potential and I'll coach them up. You know, that's how they feel about this. And certainly that's where Wink Martindale is on this. And if there's anything that's aligned in that building from the coaches, there is that confidence. I don't want to call it arrogance. I will just call it the confidence that if you give me talent, we will maximize that talent. We will scheme for it. We will train for it. We will eat for it. We will live for it. We will dream for it. You know, that we will absorb whatever that thing is and bring them in here and get the best out of them. And sure. That sounds to me to be coach speak or whatever, but this place has a long reputation in this industry of doing that.
Sure. When you look at the edge rusher position now, I would say 2 years into it, has Jalen Ferguson lived up to what they hoped? And he's a guy who was kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum as Owe. Incredibly productive. He broke Terrell Suggs' NCAA sacks record. Hasn't done a whole lot now. And this is where I'll go into the development of edge rushers. And this is where Owe is interesting as far as where the Ravens are right now at that position. They can't afford for him to have the learning curve that, and maybe Jalen Ferguson figures it out this year, maybe he doesn't. But Tyus Bowser, first couple of years, looked like a bust. Paul Kruger looked like a bust the first couple of years. Za'Darius Smith wasn't really until midway through his third season, you know, and certainly in his contract year, where, you know, he looked like a guy that was an impact player. Matthew Judon didn't play a ton his first year. So I think it is going to be interesting, and that's where I'm going to get into talking about Dalen Hayes in a moment. But with Owe, they can't really afford to have him be on the slower path that some of these other guys who were playing behind Terrell Suggs or playing behind Elvis Dumervil or playing behind, you know, Suggs when he was a rookie. Peter Bowler and Adalys Thomas were there. I mean, two Pro Bowl outside linebackers. So in Owe's case, he's got to come in and play at a high level much sooner rather than later. On the flip side, you look at someone like Dalen Hayes, who's taken in the fifth round, not a terribly productive player at Notre Dame, but did have a nice 2020 season. You know, doesn't wow you from a physical tools standpoint in the way that Owe does. At the same time, he's not way too slow or way too small or way too fat or way too skinny. You know, he has a decent floor for a fifth round pick. And what's interesting for him is one thing that we've talked about, as much as we talk about edge rusher, what do we think about? Getting after the quarterback, setting the edge, playing the run, right? But you also need some outside linebackers who can drop into coverage. What was that for the Ravens last year? It was Judon and Bowser. Pernell McPhee is not dropping into coverage at this stage of his career. Jalen Ferguson has not been someone who looks like he can drop into coverage. Owe, I think you're probably going to try to cultivate him as a situational rusher and then add more to his plate. In the way that Terrell Suggs was the same way, I would say Dalen Hayes for a fifth round pick, and look, not going to start anything crazy like that. There is a decent path for him to be in that rotation potentially if he can show he can drop in the coverage a little bit, because Bowser's not going to be able to play every single play in every single series. So Hayes did that a little bit at Notre Dame this past year, and he looked okay doing it. Now, he's 6'3", he's 253 pounds, not as fast as OA, he's not as strong, any of that, but does he have a profile? And one thing I'll say about him is a captain at Notre Dame, highly regarded, and this gets into some of the character aspects you were talking about a little bit earlier. Smart football player. Can he pick up enough where he might be a guy that plays, you know, 15, 20 snaps a game, maybe not in week one, but maybe halfway through the season, because they are going to need someone else who can do that for them. They need a backup Sam linebacker. And right now, I'm not sure who that guy is. Bowser's going to start. They paid him. He's the guy that stayed, but I don't know who's going to spell him. And of that group of edge rushers, you know, most of those guys profile as, you know, kind of that rush linebacker spot. So they need someone to play the Sam. So even someone like Dalen Hayes, fifth round pick, nothing about his profile that suggests he would play much as a rookie. And he's, you know, he'll be a special teams guy or trying to, you know, avoid the game day inactive list, or, you know, fifth round pick, you're not guaranteed to make the roster. You got to, you know, you got to make the team as a fifth rounder, but there is a path there. So that's where it's interesting for him. The other guy, and you've mentioned him, that I think you kind of look at this, you know, these day three guys, as far as a path to one, make the roster, two, how quickly you're contributing. I look at someone like Sean Wade. We know Tavon Young. I mean, Tavon Young has essentially missed three of the last four full seasons, save for a couple, you know, he played two games last year. We know that the Ravens have been in a tough spot at the nickel spot. When he's gone down, they've had to move Marlon Humphrey. Humphrey's been great there, but you like being able to play Marlon Humphrey on the outside and do what he can do on the outside. So while Sean Wade struggled last year playing on the outside and very, very apparently was a, you know, teams were able to see that he's not an outside corner, but you look at what he did at Ohio State the previous 2 years, great tackler. I think he's someone they could use on some of their blitz packages. When they blitz the nickel, they blitz someone from the secondary, and he can cover a slot receiver. So he's not going to, I'm not saying they're going to cut Tavon Young and he's not going to make the team or anything like that. But if Tavon Young doesn't bounce back, if he, God forbid, gets hurt again, and knowing how much money he's going to be making, you know, Sean Wade, you know, he could be the backup there and he could be the slot corner of the future. So, you know, again, you look at some of these guys with the combination of production or potential, you know, and you look at growth and it's really interesting to see, you know, kind of the combination of some of the experience. And then you have, you know, someone like Brandon Stevens, who, you know, was a UCLA running back before he transferred to SMU and played corner, wasn't all that highly regarded, but it sounds like the Ravens see some skills that maybe he converts to safety. And maybe in a couple of years, he's someone that's in the conversation there. So, you know, you want some of those guys that you can develop. I mean, you know, day three picks, you know, most, for the most part, they're not going to play year one for the most part. They're going to play a little bit on special teams, or, you know, they're going to get hurt in training camp and stashed on IR, or they're going to be a game day scratch. But at the same time, you're thinking about these guys from a long-term perspective. What might they become 2022, 2023? And I think that question is so much more relevant now than it was two or three years ago, because you're paying Lamar, or you're going to be paying Lamar very soon. You're paying Marlon Humphrey and Ronnie Stanley already. Mark Andrews is going to be making a lot of money. Now, we've already talked what happens with Marquise Brown. So you have so many guys that you're going to have to pay. So these day three picks that, you know, they're not all going to work out. We know that, but you're trying to project what they might be able to do for you in the future. And that's where I think they did come away with four interesting guys in that way, as far as the final day of the draft.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke and Luke at WNST.net. Big shout out to all of our sponsors, including our friends at Wise Markets, for bringing us Wise Conversations in here this week. Make sure you're eating better, spending less. And I have my preferred shopper's card right here, keeping it here. I'm not going to show you the back of it because I've already put it onto my app and stuff like that. That's why it's out here and not in my wallet, because you put it on your app and then you just use your app when you check out. It's very easy. Our friends at Wise, we appreciate that. Luke, sort of last thing for you, the pinball machine guy out of Michigan. I found it interesting. I looked down on you. You were sending the text courtesy of Coons Ford, and Dennis will be here this week too, talking draft. Nobody's more excited about this whole thing than him, but you look down, it's 1 minute, it's, oh, Ohio State, oh, Notre Dame, oh, Michigan. And I'm thinking, what, did John just draft people that live near his brother, or what's going on, man?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think First of all, if you look at the last couple of drafts, they have skewed a little more back towards big schools, Power Five conferences. For years, what did we talk about with the Ravens drafting? Small school guys, right? FCS level guys. I mean, the Ladarius Webbs. I mean, Joe Flacco played at Delaware, even though he was at Pitt before that. But you look at this draft class, the quote smallest school is SMU, which, you know, I mean, no, they're not like a power blue blood kind of program.
Cheating? Oh, that was a long time.
Right, right. Yeah, that's almost before my time. I mean, that's way back when. But it is interesting to see that. I do think with the pandemic, I mean, first of all, I mean, FCS football, I mean, they've been playing in the spring, some the programs that are playing. I mean, we know Towson and programs like that didn't play at all.
I've seen all these guys get drafted from North Dakota State, and they're like mauling these poor SOBs.
Oh, yeah. Forever. Oh, sure, sure.
And what does it say to me that you went to North Dakota State and you're a tackle, and every week you get some pipsqueak like me in front of me and you push them around? I mean, I don't get it. It's weird, man.
At the same time, you see where Trey Lance went, and it's like, well, you know, I mean, there's some great players that come from that level. Yeah, okay. Sure. But to go back to your point, I'm glad you brought up Ben Mason, because I was just talking about some of the other guys. I mentioned Sean Wade, and maybe he's their nickel corner in a couple years. You know, maybe they move on from Tavon Young after this year if he can't bounce back, and we know he's making good, you know, real money. You talk about Tylan Wallace, you know, if Sammy Watkins moves on after this year, does he step into the starting lineup? I think Ben Mason's interesting because immediately, even before the draft, he got comparisons to Patrick Ricard, obviously, you know, fullback, you know, he's a guy who dabbled on the defensive line a little bit. You know, the Ravens are listing him as a tight end, but keep in mind, going back to what I've said about this roster and how expensive it's getting, Patrick Ricard's entering the final year of his deal. Now, I'm not saying the Ravens are 100% going to move on from him, but you bring Ben Mason in. Can he do similar things for you that Patrick Ricard has done the last few years? And then Patrick Ricard, now the Ravens, yeah, they value a fullback like that a little bit differently, but there are other teams in the league that use fullbacks. Kyle Juszczyk's made a boatload of money in San Francisco. I think
Nick Boyle has made a boatload of money in Baltimore.
Yeah. So you look at something like that. I think you look at Ben Mason and say, well, get him in the program. You know, he's probably going to be a guy that I would think would be a game day scratch, you know, healthy scratch, you know, depending on if Boyle and Ricard are healthy. You know, you can't have that many blocking fullback tight end guys. I mean, you gotta have some.
Somebody tweeted he wanted to see all three of them on the field at the same time. Yeah. I said that must be an autograph session.
Or maybe, you know, put J.K. Dobbins behind all three. I mean,
goal
and just
line,
let him go crazy.
You know,
right,
from
right.
1 foot line or
sure,
something.
Sure. Or, you know, forget Dobbins, put Gus Edwards behind them. I mean, that would just be hilarious. But the point is, you know, someone like Ben Mason and, look, I don't love the idea from a value standpoint of drafting a fullback in the fifth round in this day and age, just because of what I said. The Ravens, the 49ers, and a half dozen other teams care about having a fullback. No one else, you know, no one else. They're teams that don't even have one on the roster. So from a value standpoint, that's where I look at that and say, they like this guy clearly to use a fifth round pick rather than, you know, wait, you know, and you trade back into the sixth or seventh round, or you see if he's going to be a priority undrafted free agent. So they bring him in, you see what he looks like for a year, you see where Patrick Ricard is at this point, you see what his market is. I mean, you know, if he makes another Pro Bowl, he's going to be a three-time Pro Bowl fullback. There might be three or four other teams that want to pay him $4 million a year, whereas the Ravens say, wow, we can't afford to do that at this point in time with where our roster is. So I looked at Ben Mason and say, well, you know, maybe he's Patrick Ricard's replacement come next year. I'm not writing off Ricard, you know. He's been a terrific story, and even whether it's with the Ravens next year or someone else, he's going to get paid and he's going to make money because he's really good at what he does. But those are the kind of picks you look at and say, that's interesting. Just like I've said this, but you know, Brandon Stevens. I mean, if there's one pick out of the eight selections the Ravens made that kind of feels like it's out of left field, you look at some of the draft guides like Pro Football Focus and some of the other pundits. They didn't have this guy ranked in the top 300 or the top 250, let alone being a late third round pick. So it could mean the Ravens are off and he's not going to be very good, or it could mean the Ravens see something in him that other teams don't see, or it could just be that because of the pandemic, because of how weird this season was, we know that outsider intel and how outsiders feel about certain players doesn't always align with how the NFL teams and talent evaluators that are actually doing it for a living feel about a guy. But Stevens is someone, you know, he was a running back until a couple years ago, until he transferred. He was a running back at UCLA. Wasn't all that terribly impressive at corner for SMU, but it sounds like the Ravens see some traits, you know, and he's 6 foot, 213 pounds. Do they develop him into a safety? And keep in mind, Deshaun Elliott, last year of his rookie contract, he was rock solid this past year. Does he take a step forward and suddenly he has teams after him and wanting to pay him more than you can afford to pay? Or does he just kind of have another solid season, but nothing special? And then you really like what you see at this from this kid in practice and what you see from him and maybe the dime package. Again, another really interesting pick that, you know, most of these picks, you look at them and say, all right, makes perfect sense. Ravens pick, you know, guy they value, school that they target. That was the one where you're like, really? Because you looked at some of the, you know, the draft pages and they had him as a fifth or sixth or seventh round pick. I saw one page had him as a rookie free agent. So to take him late in the third round doesn't mean they're wrong, but that's the one where, as I mentioned, the Ravens are so highly regarded for a reason by observers and media and pundits. But that was the one where you kind of look at it and say, wow, that really doesn't match up with how people were talking about this kid. So I'll be really interested to kind of see how he looks this spring and summer as far as what exactly the Ravens saw in him.
Full reports on Bateman and Owe already up in our podcast audio vault. You can find more out at BaltimorePositive.com. Luke will be back to staying up late with the Seattle Mariners this week. The Orioles coming home, taking on the Red Sox over the weekend as well. We have Preakness next week, Derby, doing lots of Baltimore Positive stuff. I've been catching up with Rock and Rollers. I had Tommy Cromwell on the show. I've got some surprises up my sleeve. You can find all of that and more at WNST.net. AM 1570, where we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.